B-Pod Studios.
Making the workday a little more entertaining.
Floppity flop, flop, flop. There.
It's Zoe and the Beetle on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
We're joined by Bert Breer of the MMQB. He's brought to you by Rockland Federal Credit Union. Times have been tough. Rockland Federal Credit Union can help with the products you need, a free on-demand credit monitoring tool, and the personal service you deserve. Visit rfcu.com today. Hey, Bert.
Hey, what's up, guys?
What's up, Bert?
Very normal night last night for everybody, right?
Sure. Well, trade deadline, sure.
Yeah, trade deadline.
We didn't think it'd do much.
Yeah.
They didn't do much. But let's start here. Let's not start with trade deadline. We'll get to that in just a bit. Let's start with Bill Belichick. Yep. Because, Bert, I spoke with you a little bit about this on Sunday. Mm-hmm. And that is sort of the openness or some of the answers that Bill Belichick has given this year. On Sunday, we were talking about what he had said in his interview with Charlie Weiss. Now, this mm-hmm. week, we've been presented with even more as Belichick sort of doubled down on that in his weekly hit across the street. So are you surprised or even shocked at some of the things that Bill Belichick has said this year?
I don't think he's lying about the stuff that he's saying. I think there's a lot of truth in that, and that they did mortgage some contracts, and that's put them in a tough spot this year. They were all in for the last few years. So I don't think that there's, you know, I don't think that's making stuff up. That stuff is there, and we've talked about that. They're carrying $30 million in dead cap this year. So I think that exists. I'm not surprised that he would say this stuff privately to people. I'm stunned he would say it publicly, because this goes against everything that we've heard about the way the Patriots operate for the last 20 years. And I've always felt like, guys, like, he doesn't talk to us in the media. He talks through us. And I've always felt like every message that he gives us publicly in those sorts of forums have been intended for his locker room. Like, what sort of message does that send his team, right? Like, the team that's got to get ready to play under these circumstances with the COVID stuff and everything else they're dealing with this year. Like, what sort of message does that send to them, that the team sort of views the year this year? Now, maybe it's obvious, and maybe that's why he said it. It doesn't take too much work to figure out why they're in the position that they're in. But I was very surprised to see him say this stuff publicly, just because I don't know that it sends a very good message to his locker room.
So I agree with that.
Yeah.
That's like, it's okay. What are we doing? What did I opt in for? Why? What are we going through this for? See, that's the one that resonates with me, is the ones that have won with him. And knows what it takes to win. New guys, there's nothing you can do about those. Young kids. Those guys are still, their heads are spinning. But you know, those hardcore veterans are sitting there thinking about it. You don't have many of them, but there's enough around. You know, your offensive line, your secondary, those are your strengths right now. And that's funny how that works out, right? The strengths of your team, your offensive line, and your secondary.
But the
that's
sort
your veterans.
Of the messaging from the coach on this team always sort of trickles down through the players, too. As you say, he speaks through the media to his players. The right. players sort of pick up on those cues and sort of parrot what it is that the head coach is saying from time to time. That's something we've seen forever under Bill Belichick. Mike Florio wrote this today. No excuses were accepted ever in New England. Injuries, next man up. Salary cap crunch, make do with what you have. Bad weather, suck it up and play. That history makes Bill Belichick's unprecedented turn at excuse making even more stunning. And even though he insists he's not making an excuse, he's smart enough to know that some will view it that way. He writes, the biggest problem for Belichick comes from the fact that with some within the locker room, they'll view it that way, causing players to regard 2020 as a reset year, one in which the usual standards don't apply. How could they not reach that conclusion consciously or otherwise? And then the other part is, what happens if those excuses and that explanation, if you want to call it that, trickle right down to the players? They have a bad game. Well, hey, salary cap.
Right.
Here, you know, I mean, how does that not happen now?
You know, Beal, you know what makes it worse is like what these guys have gone through. You know, I mean, like, and so you've seen it down at the stadium, like what these guys go through to go to work every day, like the restrictions, wearing masks around the building, the testing, like all of this stuff that they've been going through. And it's not just since, like, you know, September 13th when they opened the season. It's from the end of July. So these guys have been in this for 3.5 months now. That sort of thing wears on you in what's already a very demanding program. And I just think that there's that, like, there's all of this that I think, you know, has to be wearing on guys. And so now if they've been handed an excuse like, this is why you aren't playing well, this is why you aren't winning, this is why this is happening, this is why that's happening, human nature would be to take the excuse, right? Like, isn't that like if you've been through so much and you've dealt with so much over the last few months just to have a football season, and now you're losing games and your head coach is putting that reasoning out there for you, like, human nature is to grab for it, right? And say, well, this is why we're not winning.
And
that's not going to help them over the next 9 weeks.
No, that's good points. Like, Bill has never really given you anything. He'd yes, no, you, and sort of be grumpy about it. But even, like, the leaders in past years, I mean, look at Brady. Every time Brady would talk, he would talk long. He knew how to, I don't want to say sugarcoat it, but he could dance around the questions. Like, there's no dancing around that now. And that's what's scary.
Yeah, no, you can't deny it. He's played it out in uncertain terms. And it's
like,
Florio
even Brady
wrote,
protected him last year. Like, well, he knew it was bad, but, you know, we're keep playing together as a team.
And to give you this last line of Florio Bird, it says, it allows players to make excuses for the season, for not going the way they wanted it to, abandoning the relentless edge and urgency that all players on past Patriots teams have shown. It's just, it now can, as you said, you can grab for that.
That's the thing is that, like, and I had a conversation with you guys remember the name Bobby Carpenter? He was a first round pick.
Ohio State guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, played for Parcells, and I may have brought this story up to you guys, but I had a conversation with him over the summer. I had him on my podcast, and we were talking about it, and we were talking about all the different ways COVID was going to affect the season and everything else, and you know, he'd obviously talked to a lot of players who are in this now. And, they talked about how it's tough, you know, like the stuff that you have to do, like the discipline you have to show outside the building, all of it's really, really difficult. The point he brought up to me, you know, at that point was, well, you know, what happens for the team with a team that goes 0-5? What happens with the team that starts 2-7? Like naturally, like when you take the carrot of winning away and take some of the like team goals away, now, all of a sudden, are those guys going to be as diligent? Are they going to be as locked in?
The monotony and the grind. You see, that's right. I totally agree with this.
And that's the thing. That's the thing is, like, so now you're there, right? You're 2-5 now. So, like, again, like this program and like everyone here knows this, like this program is so demanding and they ask so much of their guys on a day-to-day basis. And it even wore all-time greats like Rob Gronkowski and Tom Brady out. And, you know, you're asking for that now under these circumstances with the COVID on top of it, without the carrot of winning there right now, because they aren't winning right now. And now the coach is going into an excuse. I put one together with the other And if you're in that locker room, it'd be very easy right now to say, the hell with this.
I've talked to guys and they said the thing that sucks is like you have to platoon when you lift. Like you have scheduled lifting times and it varies and normally, they said in the inner circumstance, like the whole off season or during the year, we lift with our guys. Like the whole team's in there once, and the place is going, the music is cranking, and you know you feel like you're a team, and you like being there. Like they don't have the same locker room time. Some guys are just grabbing their food and just go eat in my truck. So I'm not allowed to sit and eat with 10 offensive linemen.
But. Bert, I speculated yesterday that Belichick's motivation behind this is that he's hearing it. He's sensitive to the criticism. They have a losing record. Nobody's in a good mood when
you're
losing.
Team's not coming together.
And he's hearing it not only on the front of the Patriots aren't good, but Brady is. And Brady's going in the right direction. And I think that's important to everybody involved here. And I think he, as a human being, sort of pushed back against
that criticism. You've been talking about winning without Brady for years now.
Because it's just a reaction. Yeah. It's something that he doesn't want to hear, and he's hearing it.
Yeah, and I think the other thing is, too, like I would digest this a little differently if he was a little bit more, I would say, a little bit more accountable for why this happened, right?
Right.
Like, so we hear about.
But he hasn't been.
Well, because we hear about, like, okay, well, there's a cap crunch. True. We hear about, oh, our team got older. True. Why does that exist? Well, it exists because you haven't drafted very well, because that's where your cheap talent comes from. So in an ideal world right now, you would have third and fourth year players hitting their prime that would be able to replace the Chungs and the Hightowers of the world, maybe even the Bradys of the world, right? The Gronkowskis of the world. Like in an ideal world, you drafted a lot better than this and you have young, cheap talent coming through that help you fix your cap problem. There's a great example of that, by the way. The 2017 New Orleans Saints, right? they were in cap like the cap hell. Like, and if you go back and you look, like in 2016, that was regarded as one of the worst rosters in the league. It really looked like the Peyton Breeze thing was coming undone. Peyton had flirted with the Colts. There was talk that he could go to the Cowboys. They had one out, like they knocked one draft out of the park.
Yep.
With Marshawn Lattimore, Ryan Ramczyk, Alvin Kamara, Marcus Williams, Trey Hendrickson, and then all of a sudden, like everything was fixed, right? Like, so like that's the thing is like you get in this position because you don't have young talent on your roster that you've gotten through the draft. And if Bill was like, if Bill was accountable to that, like if he had said that to Charlie, okay, like now you're taking responsibility for it. Instead, he just sort of treated it like it was something that happened to him, not because of him. And that's why it's a little
harder. He said on Monday, it's nobody's fault. No, there's no fault to be had here for anyone. And that is the opposite of accountability. And I would also take it a step further and say, for a guy who was always preaching that we do what's in the best interest of the team, I don't understand how coming out and saying these things on multiple occasions in the last week is in the best interest of the team for 2020.
Right.
I don't know how you can make that case. Bert Breer is with us. He's on Zoom. We'll be talking more with him coming up. It was a quiet deadline across the league, and it was a quiet deadline for the Patriots. Stephon Gilmore still here. We'll talk about that and the possibility of the Patriots adding a Buckeye. That's on the way.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Comes to sports, they're knowledgeable.
Tell me about a pie that doesn't have a top over it.
And always on their game.
I walk around my house naked all the time.
Solak and Bertrand, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
I'm told that the Miami Dolphins are trading wide receiver Isaiah Ford to the New England Patriots. The Patriots have needed some depth at wide receiver. Isaiah Ford was a player that Ryan Fitzpatrick liked to throw the football to. Obviously, Fitzpatrick is on the bench. Tua is starting right now. And it looks like the Dolphins are making the rare intra-division trade of sending a wide receiver within the division to the New England Patriots. And I think the last time they sent a wide receiver to New England, it worked out pretty good for Wes Welker and the New England Patriots.
Deadline in the NFL. Patriots get Isaiah Ford as part of their day. Heard that report right there. Stephon Gilmore is still here, though. Stephon Gilmore was not moved at the deadline. Bert, we saw a report yesterday from Diana Russini that the asking price was a first and a player. Why do you think it is that Gilmore did not get moved yesterday?
I think there are a number of reasons. The first is that I think teams are kind of looking forward towards 2021 and into the future more than maybe they would have in the past because the cap's going to go down next year. And, you know, basically what that means is that, you know, anybody who has a big number for next year or is expected to ask for big numbers next year is by nature, is by definition going to be more difficult to move. So I think that was definitely a big part of it. His age is another part of it. If you look at it, we went through the list last week, I believe, but
yep.
10 guys have been moved for first round picks, since April of 2018. The every one of those guys was 27 or younger. The last guy over 30, I believe, was Carson Palmer. And I couldn't find a quarterback, over 30 who, you know, has been moved for a first round pick. And then I think it's also the way teams are valuing draft picks going forward. You know, with that cap issue, with that cap crunch coming, I think most contenders are valuing their draft picks a little bit differently because that's where your cheap talent's going to come from. And so I think a combination of all of those things made it more difficult to move high profile veterans. And obviously Stephon Gilmore's at the very top of that list as far as guys who are going to be available over the last couple of weeks.
Okay. I've heard multiple people try and make the case that he could be worth more in the offseason than he was at the deadline. Is that possible?
It depends on how he plays and it depends on what his ask is. You know, I mean, like if he plays great over the last 8-9 weeks of the season, you know, yeah. I mean, like then maybe, I still don't see him going for a one, but You know, because that's a premium position, I certainly, you know, I could see a scenario where maybe you could get a two and something else for him in the offseason. I think the risk, though, is that, like, you know, he doesn't play well over the next 8 weeks. And then you're talking about a guy who wants money, right? Like, who doesn't want to play next year for $7 million and is on the wrong side of 30 and isn't ascending, you know? Yep. So I don't know. It's, like, just hard for me to conjure where you're going to be able to get a lot more. And that's not saying they got great offers this time around either, but I think that had to be part of the equation, that there was a lot of risk to waiting till the end of the year, because at that point you're going to be looking at a player who is going to be turning 31 at the beginning of next year and is going to want, you know, a lot of money to sign anything long-term. And all you got to do is see how much it costs to sign corners now. Look at what Marlon Humphrey got in Baltimore. Look at what Jalen Ramsey got in L.A.
What is J.C. Jackson going to be worth here if ultimately he becomes your number one corner, you know, at some point here?
Yeah, it's a good question. So, I mean, I like,
because they gave Jones, you know, decent money in his last contract.
Is J.C. up? I believe he's up, right?
I think he's I think so.
I'd have to look that up.
Like, it's 4 years, right? Yeah.
So this is his fourth year, then he's up. Yeah. So if he's up, then that means you got to prevent him from going to the market. And the franchise tag for corners, I believe, is at around $15 million.
He's a restricted free
restricted
agent.
That's it.
Okay, so if he's restricted, then that means you probably have to put the first round tender on him.
Correct.
Slap
that on him.
Right. So you slap the first round tender on him. That costs you about, I think it'd be like about $4 or $5 million for next year. And then what he's going to ask you to do, what his agent will ask you to do, is work off of the franchise tag. And basically what that means is, like, we want you to negotiate with us based on the fact that you're going to have to tag him to keep him in 2022. And the franchise tag for corners is going to be up around 15, 16 million.
Jim Louth brought this up yesterday. His number is going to be north of 12.
His agent is Drew Rosenhaus, by the way.
I think that if you're the agent, you are well within your rights to ask for between 15 and 20 million a year. Maybe not what Humphrey got. Maybe not what Ramsey got, because those guys are obviously those are guys who've been on all pro teams. So JC's not there. But, you know,
undrafted free agent out of Maryland.
This does give you kind of like a nice piece of flexibility here.
Similar to the Malcolm one, right? Like,
you guys can actually go to him now, right? Like, right, because most guys you have to wait 3 years, but because he was undrafted, like, you can go to him now and try to get a deal done. And so this is where you actually could get the discount. Like, if you feel like this guy is your future at that position, like, and then you go to him and you say, well, you know, why not, like, you know, say, you know, forget about the injury risk, like everything else. Like, let's do something now, and let's do something that makes sense for everybody. And maybe you get him below market now. If you let it go until the end of the season, now all of a sudden the way the player is going to think is, okay, I'm 16 games out from free agency, at which point they might have to franchise me. So I want something worth around what the franchise tag number is, which, again, at the corner position is around 15 or 16 million.
Bert Prayer with us, and Bert, there's the possibility of Ted Ginn Jr. becoming a Patriot today because he was released by the Chicago Bears. Zoe and I have both advocated for him to land here in New England.
Would he stay at your house?
He's only got three catches, but would you give him a bedroom? Would you let him stay with you?
I don't have the extra bedrooms that Tom Brady does, but if he wants to sleep on the couch, he's welcome.
Nice.
Couch. I mean, you know,
why guys can sit there and talk about Woody Hayes. Yeah.
You know, I mean, this is a true Buckeye coming into the home.
Yeah, well, he would like this room, I think. I like the idea of it because Cam's got chemistry with the guy, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, Cam's played with him. He can help you in different areas too. Can be a kick returner for you. Can be a punt returner for you. And like, he brings that element, that downfield element, where, you know, he's a guy who's proven, who can get down the field and make plays in that area, that I think could really open up things for your running game. And if you guys want to talk about the kind of offense the Patriots have to play around Cam, like, think about this. I'll relate it to Baltimore, right? One of the reasons why the Ravens drafted Hollywood Brown and drafted Miles Boykin last year is because those guys were, like, just like big play machines in college, right? Like, so those are guys that could break off 40, 50, 60 yard plays, you know, at the drop of a hat. What that does, that takes guys out of the box. And so the Ravens' whole kind of idea with it was, if we are going to be reliant on our run game and our quarterback, we want to give them more space. What stretches the field? Fast guys stretch the field. And so that can be part of the equation with Cam too, where you say, okay, if we bring in somebody like Ted Ginn, where at least they're going to have to respect him down the field, that could open up things for our run game and kind of change the dynamic for everything for us. So I actually like the idea of it.
All for it, man. All for
well,
it.
Yeah, I don't see what you got to lose.
Nothing. There's nothing to lose at this point.
You need bodies.
Was he just not getting used in Chicago? That was what we saw today.
Yeah, like, I mean, that's part of it. They also have a kid. They have a kid, Mooney, the
oh, yeah.
Out of Tulane, who sort of plays in that role for them, who they really, really like. And he's started to produce lately, which I think it kind of got to the point for them where it was like Ginn and Mooney were kind of redundant to one another, and they really wanted to give Mooney all the rest.
Mooney's rookie, but that Wims kid looks like a real winner, huh? He could have got suspended.
That fight, I've never seen anything like. I can't remember the last time I saw.
You get
like
giddy.
That.
I love watching you. You get giddy when these fights break out. You're like, yes, fight. You're like me, fight. Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. That was entertaining. And too, you know, like that the guy he punched too. Do you guys know that's the second time that guy's gotten punched within like a month?
Yeah, what's Michael Thomas punched him?
Yeah,
in
Mike
practice,
Thomas
right?
punched him in practice too. And both times he got punched with his helmet on. Which, I mean, that just tells you how much the other guy's pissed off, right? If he's willing to swing at your helmet,
want to break his hand by punching you in the side of the helmet.
Right, stupid. Right. So, that was a pretty good one, though.
Not bad. Not
the best one I've seen in a while.
I think it was probably like a 7 or 8 out of 10, maybe, somewhere in there.
What are you hearing on Dan Mullen?
Hang tight, Bert.
We'll do that on the other side.
We'll talk to Bert in just a little bit. We'll be talking to David Andrews
out there
coming up.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Drive home with Felger and Matt. Right now, Zolak and Bertrand on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Welcome back to Zolak and Bertrand. From our Town Fair Tire Studios, we go to the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. That's where David Andrews is. And he's brought to you by Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. It's Patriot Center, David Andrews. Hey, David, how are you?
What's up, guys?
Hey, see, what's cool is at the end of this, you get one of those lizards at the end of the year. So you and your wife.
Really?
Yeah, we're going to put it in a cage for you and send it
gecko
to you.
Gecko?
Yeah.
Send it to you?
I'm sure our dogs and cat will love that.
Hey, we talked to you a week ago, and we talked about...
Wait, hold on. Can we ask him about the dogs and cats first?
Sure.
That's probably more fun to do than get into the football team right now.
Yeah.
How many dogs you got?
I got 2 dogs.
What kind of dogs?
German Shepherds.
Nice.
See, I thought you'd get the Bulldog, playing for the Bulldogs.
Well, see, the problem is with a Bulldog. A Bulldog's too close to, me. They fart. They snore. they're just, they got a lot of health issues,
breathing problems, right?
With Dave, bulldogs? I had 3 of them.
Yeah, my buddy's got a bulldog, and I'm like, dude, that's like living like with one of us. My buddy who played offensive line with me at Georgia, and his dog's just sitting on the couch and can't even hear the TV because he's snoring.
And they smell so bad. It's like somebody walks around like, who didn't wipe their rear? What is that?
There's something to be said for that, though. Instead of getting a pet that, looks like you and is an animal version of you, get a dog that's, we have a dog who's really lean and she's muscular and she's active and friendly. I'm like, oh, that's nothing like me. Good.
Yeah, it's like the opposite of when you watch 101 Dalmatians and there's that scene where all the dogs reflect their owners.
Yeah.
It's like the opposite of that. You get something that you get something that you want to strive to be. Right?
Yeah.
Shepherd, strong, fast, super smart, all those things.
Yeah, exactly.
You're not any of those things.
Exactly. They're really good. They catch balls. They catch frisbees out of the air. I can't do that. So.
Right.
Have you heard our Winovich interview? We do him every Thursday. We get weird with him. He's different.
Yeah, no, I haven't heard it.
All right. Well,
thanks for listening. Yeah,
thanks
really
for listening,
appreciate
Dave.
It.
No, do you ever drive around and listen to sports radio? Ever?
I will in the spring. Sometimes back home, I'll listen to some Georgia football stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I listen to some of the Georgia, you know, football stuff back home.
You probably listen to that Paul Feinbaum show. You get them wackos from
Slater Club. I can't do Paul Feinbaum.
Hey, we talked to you last week about sense of urgency, and you said we got to turn this around. And I thought you guys had a good bounce, a good response since the San Francisco game. What do you guys feel as a team you're doing really well right now, especially on offense? What do you feel you're doing really well?
You know, I thought we ran the ball really well last week. Thought we were a pretty physical team up front. We just kind of got into a little bit of a rhythm offensively. And then there was times during that game where we didn't, where, you know, we got penalties and we're playing the game from, you know, long yardage. And that's really not any team's successful, you know, way to play the game. So I thought we did some pretty well, good things there. You know, played a little better complimentary football with getting some points off with JC's interception. Still think we could start faster. I don't think, you know, need to get some points in the first quarter. Try to play from ahead. Really like to, you know, try to work on that this week and, you know, go from there.
We talked to you last week about where you are record-wise and how that's probably it is. It's new to you as a member of the New England Patriots. The team has always been really good. And Bill Belichick, your head coach, said this week that the team sold out to win 3 Super Bowls, and that's why you're in the position you're in right now. Do you feel that way?
You know, I think as a player, and you know, my job is to come in and work my tail off every day and be the best player that I can be. And I think, you know, we got guys doing that, and we can all do a little bit better job of that. But, it's just we're not playing good enough right now. Doing things to hurt ourselves, that's going to cost us. And, you kind of see it. That's just you do those things, and it's hard to win.
You were pretty positive last week with 4 losses, saying you'd had years where you lost 4 games and you'd won a Super Bowl. Now it's 5 losses. Do you feel the same way a week later? And do you feel like there's still something to have a chance here in the division or to become a playoff team?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there's still a lot of football left to be played. I'm still positive. I thought the way we went out and played last week was, you know, much more how we want to play as a team overall. Like I said, we just didn't do enough little things to win the game. That was a winning formula for us.
Hey, people talk about little things here and there. There's like one little thing could have changed the course of some of these losses for you guys. I looked at, and I don't know if it showed this on the film, but it looked like watching a game from where I was calling it off a freaking screen, that the play before the fumble at the end of the game, you guys tried to run a screen to Burkhead to the left. You and Shaq were out there. Do you think you would have walked in if that ball was completed?
I believe that was called into a screen. I mean, obviously it was a screen pass.
Yeah.
I believe it was called into a blitz, which, you know, so, I mean, that's, you know.
It didn't feel like anybody was home for them. Like, it was you and Shaq out there.
You know, you want to try to, you know, get those plays dialed up then. Obviously, that's when screens become, you know, can become big plays. But, you know, I had a coach, you know, say one time, screens are kind of, they're either, I won't use his exact language, but they're either castles or they're, piles of crap sometimes. So it's just how they go sometimes.
All right. Well, getting ready for the Jets now, the team that is in the division, and you've got a couple of times here on the schedule. Is there anything in your early prep for this game that stands out?
Yeah, I think they got to, you know, I got a lot of respect for, you know, Coach Williams. I think he's a great defensive coach. I feel like their D line's a really good defensive line. I think Quinnen Williams playing really good. Obviously didn't play against him last year. So, they got some good players over there. And, you know, it's a team that's going to be, you know, we're both hungry for a win right now. So, it's going to be a tough game. It always is a tough game with them. It'd be a good matchup.
How's your hand feeling? Feel better?
It's great.
Good.
It's always great.
Excellent. Good answer.
Good. All right, David. Well, good luck on Monday night. Thanks for the time.
See you, buddy.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate you.
David Andrews with us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline.
He's driving some more. Where do you think he's going?
I don't know.
Hunting? I think he's going to hunt today.
No?
No.
What do you think he's doing?
He's going to eat somewhere, probably.
Oh, okay.
Almost lunchtime.
All right. Very good. Bert Breer will be with us on the other side, and we'll get to your calls. 617-779-0985 is the telephone number. We'll get some open lines. You want to jump on board? Good time to do it. We'll talk to Bert about a couple of changes. One that's happening, one that's a potential change in the NFL. We'll do that next.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Now,
if you want to get weird sometime together.
Zolak and Bertrand.
Back then, you knew not to touch it.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Bert Breer of the MMQB is with us here on Zolak and Bertrand. Make sure you go to our website, 98.5thesportshub.com. Download our app. Thanks for streaming us. Much appreciated. Bert, new rules on the sideline in the NFL. The bench area is going to expand so that players and coaches can be anywhere between the 20-yard lines. The league will also be adding benches where it's feasible. So players are going to, I guess, spread out on the sideline due to COVID. They're also requiring players and staffers to have masks on after the game that had been encouraged before, but now they're saying it's a rule, put on a mask before post-game handshakes or other activities on the field. Do they remember that these guys go out and play a game together? I mean, this is the huddle. Stuff where I say,
huddle
okay,
up, guys.
I mean, listen, I appreciate the effort. Yeah. I appreciate that you're trying to do everything possible, spread out, but at the end of the day, they still go out and play a game.
Yeah, I mean, there's part of it that I think is maybe a little performative, I think would be the right word.
For the cameras?
But I do think that this is a reaction, and every one of these sort of measures has been reaction. I think part of this is a reaction to the whole idea of high-risk close contacts, right? Like where the Ravens, for example, you see them lose a half dozen players that were close contacts to Marlon Humphrey. And so, you know, the idea here is to try to encourage everybody to stay away from one another. So like you're not having to take people out of circulation for a few days where it could wind up upsetting competitive balance. And I think the big thing is, guys, the league's goal here isn't to necessarily have the best players in the field week to week. Like, I think they know that they're going to lose some really good players over the next few weeks because of COVID as, you know, we get into the colder weather in November and December. You know, their goal is to get the season played, is to get 256 games played in 17 weeks, ideally, and if not that, in 18 weeks. All of that is inventory for the television networks. The television networks are, you know, like we've said this for a long time, right? Like that Goodell has bosses, and his bosses are the owners. Well, what we're finding out through this process is the owners have people they answer to, too, and those people work at the networks. And so I think as much as anything else, like these sorts of measures are to try to make sure that the league gets all 256 games played and then gets the full, you know, complement of playoff games played. The best way to do that is to try to prevent taking guys off the field. And, you know, the way you keep guys on the field is to, you know, kind of minimize the amount of close contacts they have when a guy does have a positive case. I think they've come to the conclusion that there will be positive cases over the next few
weeks. What are you hearing on 49ers? 49ers got shut down today because of COVID.
They have a game tomorrow.
Right, which is kind of crazy. I got to look a little bit more into that because this sort of was breaking while we were on the air.
Call Shanahan.
Who are you talking to? You were on a phone.
Kyle?
I'm on the air with you guys. I can't talk to two
people. Oh, give Kyle a call.
We saw you during a break.
He's one of your guys. We know he's one of your guys, Bert.
So here's what I would say with that.
You call Ted Ginn during a break?
Right now, we know there's the one player who has a positive,
right? He's just blowing right past us.
Which then the next step is, like I said, the contact tracing and how many people have been close to him over the last few days. And that's going to come down to how closely the Niners have been following the protocols. And, you know, the next piece is how do you, like, how does this move forward tomorrow, like into tomorrow? Like, you probably, like if you're shutting down the facility, you have to do everything virtually today. That probably means guys aren't going to the hotel tonight, which is part of the whole pregame thing. Yeah, I mean, it's an issue. I mean, especially when you consider the teams on a short week. And so I think you're starting to see some of these logistical things that are really, really difficult when it comes to dealing with all of this. And I'm going to have to do more reporting on this specific case, but I think that the main concern right now would be identifying the high-risk contacts. And then, like, if the number of high-risk contacts is pretty high, then maybe you have a decision to make on the game itself and whether or not you move it to the weekend.
Hey, Bert, we're going to get to some calls, and I just want to say this in advance. This is one of my favorite callers on this station and to this show.
Derek?
Nope.
Jake?
Green Line Johnny.
Oh,
always a good time with Green Line Johnny. Green Line Johnny, go ahead.
What's up, Beal? What's up, Zoe?
Hi.
We don't got Hotley today, do we?
He's here.
He's right here. He's been quiet, but he's here.
Oh.
Well, Bert's here.
I was going to say one less guy to pull my cob this afternoon, but it's fine. How are you, Hotty?
I'm good.
Well, before I get into how disgusted I am with you fair weather fans, I want to talk about my wild-ass weekend, if you got a minute.
Absolutely.
Hell yeah.
Always in for that.
So I got the Pats at 3.5 last week.
Sounds fun.
You already know what the score was. We got them.
Yep.
All that money I made shoveling snow. $700. Double that. So me and Scabby went out to Connecticut. Made our way to Foxwoods.
Nice.
Couldn't lose. I couldn't lose, though. It was unbelievable. And who do I see across the roulette table? A former Heisman Trophy winner. Guess who, though?
It's not Flutie.
Billy Sims.
Boomer Sooner.
Dane.
Who?
Ron Dane?
Ron Dane? From Wisconsin?
Let's go! I wish he had a Pats uniform on. Maybe we'd have a little bit more of a spark plug. Jesus.
Why do all the ex-Giants end up there? Like, we see ex-Giants there all the time. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Shooting the breeze with him, you know. Couple of Johnny Reds.
How fat is he right now?
He's a beast right now. I mean, his biceps are the size of my friggin' head.
Johnny, you made $700 shoveling snow?
Told you it came down.
Yeah, Hadley. $700, kid. That's under the table.
Yeah, well, I didn't think you were going to pay taxes on it. But
is that like a door-to-door operation, or do you have a number of people on your route?
It's under the table. I don't want to get into it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, do you have like a list of go-to places, or are you a shovel for hire?
Yeah.
Yeah, nothing pro bono. Let's put it that way.
No helping out the old lady next door?
No, we don't do that anymore.
Anymore?
Anymore.
No. As a kid.
All right, Johnny, anything else?
No, wait.
Johnny, was there a bad experience helping out the lady next door?
Me and Scabs didn't even plan on a ride home. He took his mother's truck for the weekend. End up, he bails on me. I go out and potty with Ron Dane. We're doing nose beers. I wake up in an apartment in Hartford. No wallet, no keys, no phone. I thumb it back to Newtown Square. And here we go for the Pats take. They're winning out. The only problem I see is maybe the Rams. Forget about the Ravens. Shame on you, though. You're a homer. You're number 16. Don't you forget it. Go home. Put your shirt on. Put your jersey on. Give me 100 push-ups and 3 silver bullets. That the Pats are going to get that wild card spot, and you're going to eat your words. No sellouts. Gilmore, get ready. David Andrews, you should be hitting the bench, kid. I don't know what you're doing on the air. Hopefully it's between sets. No fights. We're just going to win football games. From here on out.
All right, Johnny.
God,
it's always a trip with him.
That was fantastic.
We could dissect that call for the rest of the show.
He doesn't call often.
I want to know why he's not helping out the lady next door.
What does he do that anymore?
Not anymore.
Like, was there a bad experience with the old lady next door?
It went bad at some point.
What happened? Yeah. Well, like from 8 o'clock on with him and Ron Dane, and how he ended up, and there's a candle stuck somewhere.
You know how he got the Green Line Johnny nickname, Bert? Because he beat the bag out of a guy on the green line after a Celtics game and ended up in jail.
He went away for a little bit.
The guy had it coming to him.
He went away to jail for 60 days. Yeah.
Is that jail or do you go to college for 60 days?
So he earned that nickname.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
So his buddy Scabby bought his mom's truck.
Scabs.
That's but a then great Scab, name. Scabs left.
Scabs bailed.
What do you say?
I don't think
Scabs didn't seem like he wanted anything to do with him and Ron Dance.
He ended up in an apartment in Hartford.
Was there a note? What did he say? Nose dance, nose candy. What was he doing?
Yeah. I thought that was a right. I thought I got that reference, but I wasn't sure I heard
it. We'll have to replay it.
Say nose beers?
Nose beers. Maybe that's it. Thank you. T-Bone. Yeah. All right. T-Bone's down with the lingo.
All right, then. Bert, appreciate your time today.
No, I appreciate you Bert. Guys sending me out with that. That was great.
It's always fun. Bert Breer, MMQB, our thanks to him. We'll get to the headlines. We're right back with the noontime hour.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.